Well, again, a very great good morning to you. Thanks for coming this morning. As always, we have some announcements. Yesterday was Save a Saturday for this month. Many thanks to the few who braved the rain and the flash flood warnings and came and got some work done around the center. It was very gratifying to have them here. Very important announcement for everybody who's interested in the way this center runs and who runs it. On Sunday, June 23rd, starting promptly at 11 a.m., we will hold the annual meeting of the congregation. There will be reports from your chairman and treasurer and from the resident minister. This will be followed by election of board members. We will then retire to the monastery for a catered lunch, not a potluck lunch, a catered lunch. This is the tradition. The center feeds the congregation each year, of course, with their money. They're the ones who donate the money, but nevertheless, it's a catered lunch, and usually the food is very well received. So that we'll have an appropriate amount of food, an RSVP is required for meal. You will find a link to sign up to RSVP in your e-newsletter and on the center's website. So if you're not receiving the e-newsletter, you can go to the website and find the link there. If you do receive the newsletter, you'll find it prominently displayed there. So just click on the link, and there's a little form to fill out, and I mean, it's just a couple of lines to let us know that you're coming and how many will be with you. On July 4th, as always, we will hold our celebration of both the great country that still has religious freedom, and, of course, on July 4th, we also celebrate the Mahasamadhi of Swami Vivekananda. So on Thursday, July 4th at noon, there will be a brief talk on Swami Vivekananda, followed by songs and short readings by the congregation. We will then have a potluck lunch on the sun porch and outdoors, or in the monastery, depending on the weather. If the weather permits, of course, we'll be outdoors. The food service will be on the sun porch. But if the weather is like it is this weekend, well, we'll be inside. That's on a Thursday, July 4th. I suspect because it's on a Thursday, there'll be a lot of four-day weekenders. So I'm not expecting a very large crowd that day. Please mark your calendars for a weekend retreat on the 20th and 21st of July. Swami Chandrasekharanandaji, head of the Portland, Oregon Vedanta Society, will be with us on that Saturday and Sunday to offer his wisdom on Karma Yoga. On Saturday, there'll be a full retreat day. Starts at 10 a.m. And goes to 4:30 with a good break for lunch. And then on Sunday, he will speak from 11 to noon, all on Karma Yoga. With regard to the bookshop, I've been repeating each week, and it's been in the newsletter also, cash will be accepted for book purchases only on book and incense, and anything else that you buy from the bookshop will be accepted only on Sundays and on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings. Any other time that you wish to purchase something from the bookshop, please bring a check and leave the check in the box. But because there was some money being taken from the cash box, we're not leaving any cash in that box. Please note that your center will be closed in August. No activities except arati. This will evening arati. This will be our routine each summer. Now, there may be an exception this summer. It may be that the only time Swami Ishtananda from St. Petersburg can come and see us is in August. So we might have a weekend with Swami Ishtananda during August. If so, you'll have plenty of notice about that. So is there anything else I might have announced that should have been announced that I didn't think to announce? Anything at all?
You said you were going to talk about Yogeshananda.
Yes, well, I will do that, but that's I'm not going to have that be... it's right here in front of me. We'll get to that, but I wanted to open our session before. Thank you. So... And that will replace our song this morning, that time. So we'll open with our regular opening chant. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavai, Tejasvi Navaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. This is Swami Yogeshananda's translation of that ancient chant. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. So this is an update on Swami Yogeshanandaji. For those of you who aren't totally familiar with this, Swami Yogeshananda was the one who started this center in Atlanta. There had been other visiting swamis. Bhashananda from Chicago and some of the other Chicago monks had come here from time to time, but Swami Yogeshananda finally came and stayed. In 1999, the center was moved into the facility where you're sitting now. This chapel wasn't built until 2004-2005, the monastery building was the only building at that time. Swami Yogeshananda, in the very beginning, supported the center out of his rather meager, because he'd been a monk most of his life, he supported the center out of his Social Security check. Some devotees began to gather and assist him with that. And so by 1999, they were able to buy this property. So the Swami worked hard for decades to, and we're still feeling the momentum of his work here. He is now in hospice care at the Trubuco Monastery. That's where he'd retired to. The Trubuco Monastery is his home, and so though he had been in hospital, in Irvine, California, he asked to be returned home, and so hospice care has been arranged there for him, and that's where he is now. He's in, for those of you who've been there, there are four rooms in what's called the Brahmananda Cottage. He's in the room that is reserved for this kind of situation. This message was sent yesterday afternoon by Zach Wiles. Zach Wiles lived here when he was in school, high school and the beginnings of college, and was very close to Swami Yogeshananda. He continues to be close to Swami Yogeshananda and is spending a great deal of time with him. This, as I said, was sent yesterday afternoon. Hi, everyone. It's about 4 p.m. here, and I am sitting with Swami. He is still with us, but he is peaceful and ready to go. Yet, he still has a small appetite for juice and cookies. The morphine is affecting his mind, but he still has his trademark charm. He speaks in short phrases and goes in and out of sleep, but I can tell he appreciates small gestures like holding his hand and adjusting his covers. The monks and attendants, the hospice, professional hospice people, attendants, the monks and attendants are very attentive. Besides the caregivers, there is an informal vigil of brothers trading watches sitting by his bed. And he is still making jokes. He must be adjusted in bed every 2 hours to avoid bed sores. "You're all amateurs," he smirked, as two swamis and I were ham-fistedly trying to roll him on his side. "Hey, we're doing this for free, you know," I retorted. Swami Sarvadevananda is here this weekend. That was yesterday, Saturday. Swami Sarvadevananda is here this weekend and spent some time with him. A small trickle of visitors comes in to say hello and drop off sweets. I think later I will move the small shrine from his room into this room. For those of you who've been to Drupal, of course, he'd been living in what is called the dormitory down behind the chapel. Now, as I said, he's in a room that is more accessible to visitors and, for that matter, to everyone else. So that's what he means. I'll move the small shrine from the Swami's room into this room. It's very simple, with a picture of his guru. The atmosphere is very calm, serene, and timeless, save for the constant whirring of the oxygen machine in the corner. The Swami has absolutely no fear or regret and is patiently waiting and slightly complaining in a joking way to be called back to God. More later, Jai Ma, Zach. So since we know that prayers do reach their intended, the people that we intend them for, please let us just hold a moment's prayerful silence for Swami Yogeshananda, sending him loving thoughts and wishing him well on his way home with the Thakur and Ma. Om Hari Om, Om Hari Om, Om Hari Om Tat Sat. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Again, a welcome to all of you who made your way here this morning. Thank you for taking the time with us. You're most welcome. June is a month for study of bhakti yoga. A bhakti yogi, a bhakta, establishes a devotional relationship with God through study, prayer, ritual, and worship. As a bhakta, you practice giving every action, thought, emotion, perception, and tendency a Godward turn. All your energies and attributes, both positive and negative, are offered to the Divine Presence. Your prayer is for self-surrender and ultimately union with your Beloved. For many of us, we have a deeply loving relationship with Sri Sharada Devi, Holy Mother, the wife of Sri Ramakrishna, and of course they were not two beings, but one being in two forms. So today's topic is very relevant to Swami Yogeshananda's situation, because he, as you'll recognize, how much he has lived much of what I'll tell you about what Holy Mother said. So the topic today is Holy Mother's Assurances. The affectionate term Holy Mother refers to Sri Sharada Devi. She was Sri Ramakrishna's wife and spiritual counterpart and his first disciple. She lived from 1853 to 1920. Just think of that. So recently, she was here with us on this planet. She has been seen in many of the Vedanta centers and societies in the United States. Swami Prabhavananda saw her many times in Hollywood, at the Hollywood Center, Swami Sarvagatananda in Boston, and so on. But most notably, Swami Trigunatitananda, who was very close to Holy Mother, in the early 19-teens, when he was there in San Francisco, Swami Trigunatitananda would speak at what is now called the Old Temple. You can visit it. It's still there. It was built and finished in 1905. It was the first Hindu temple in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States especially. And it was built so well and was so protected that it survived the earthquake of 1906 that virtually leveled the city of San Francisco. There was a very severe earthquake followed by a huge fire. And so the old temple survived that. As I said, Swami Trigunatitananda was the one who built it. He was a direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna and very close to Holy Mother. Well, sometimes when the Swami would get up to speak, he would suddenly be choked up and tears would begin to roll down his face. And the reason being that there was at the back of the chapel in the old temple, and still is a lovely chapel, and you can go and sit at this very place. There's a door at the back of the chapel, and he would see, Swami Trigunatitananda would see that door open and Holy Mother come and sit on that bench in the back of the chapel. That's why he would get choked up. So Holy Mother was and is very present to many of us. As I say, she left only the body. She left the body only in 1920. After the Master passed away in 1886, Holy Mother carried on his ministry, serving as guide and inspiration for his new monastic order and for numberless disciples. There's never been an accurate count of the number of disciples that Mother had, because she initiated so many. Holy Mother was the ideal disciple, nun, wife, teacher, and mother to her many spiritual children. The Master said that Holy Mother was an incarnation of Saraswati, the Hindu goddess of knowledge, music, art, wisdom, and learning. Yet, Sharada Devi did not write books or play a musical instrument. Instead, Holy Mother served, served and served and served. She served others so simply and humbly that many took this mistress of the universe, this goddess of the universe, many took this goddess to be an ordinary village woman. She was so simple and unassuming and serviceful. Inwardly, she regarded the whole world as her own and every living being as her child. Holy Mother loved and accepted everyone. For example, she said, Sharat is my child, no doubt. And so is this dacoit, Aminajat. They are both my children. I am the mother of the blessed, the good, and the wicked. She loved and accepted everyone. Many of her close disciples recorded their conversations with her. As spiritual aspirants, we can all take great solace in the memories these disciples left for us. Here are a few of Holy Mother's assurances to which we will add others for discussion this morning. This list was compiled, I've honestly forgotten by whom, but it goes on for 30 pages. I've selected just some of what was on those 30 pages. But the entire 30 pages will be posted as a PDF along with the notes of this talk. It'll be posted on the website. So if you wish to take and read those 30 pages, you can read them online. You don't have to download the PDF. But many of you who are devotionally inclined may well want to download and even print out that PDF, because it is just full of more of what you will hear now. This is just a selection that I've put in a way that kind of leads us from one place to another. First one, and I won't announce each one as we go on, I'll just say them. My child, you are my own. Truly, you are my very own. And we have to understand that this is not limited by time, by space. As you sit here, you are Mother's own. She has that same loving relationship with you this very moment as she had with those who were her disciples. My child, you are my own. Truly, you are my very own. Disciple, those who receive your blessings now are fortunate indeed. What will happen to those who come later? Holy Mother, what do you mean? Shall they not receive it? God is everywhere, all the time. There is the Master. By his mercy, everything will be done. Is it not so in other countries? I'll tell you a story. Two of the congregation who come here, a man and a woman, several years apart, had a virtually identical dream. The dream is this. They are in the North Georgia Mountains. Oh, by the way, one of them, the man was an Indian, the woman was a Westerner. The dream opens, they're in the North Georgia Mountains, in the forest, and there's a small cabin. On the porch of the cabin are standing Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother. Sri Ramakrishna is dressed as a man would be dressed in that setting. Checked shirt and overalls. He's still barefoot, but and mother is standing there in what we would recognize as a house dress of an ordinary country woman. This vision was had by both of these people, virtually identical visions. But the woman then had a second vision. And here is Sri Ramakrishna and Ramana Maharshi standing on that porch. And mother is there, and she's playing the banjo. And Sri Ramakrishna and Ramana Maharshi are dancing together. Now, these are visions that were related to me by people I have absolute confidence. They would not in any way shade the truth. This is what they saw in their dreams. So when Holy Mother says, is it not true? Is it not so in other countries? It's so right here. And in both instances, the first time the man and the woman had this vision, they said, what are you doing here? Why are you here? And the answer that the master gave in English is very simple. We live here. We live here. Is it not so in other countries? He who has really prayed to the Master even once has nothing to fear. By praying to him constantly, one gets ecstatic love, prema bhakti, through his grace. This prema, my child, is the innermost thing of spiritual life. But notice she says, he who has really prayed to the Master even once has nothing to fear. If you've prayed from the heart with sincerity to the Master, even once. But if you wish to go beyond and have that relationship, that bhakta's relationship with the Divine, by praying to him constantly, one gets ecstatic love, prema bhakti, through his grace. This prema, my child, is the innermost thing of spiritual life. You see, my son, it is not a fact that you will never face dangers. Difficulties always come, but they do not last forever. You will see that they pass away like water under a bridge. Those who have come here and think of the Master will certainly see their chosen ideal one day. She's talking about the people sitting in this room right now. Those who have come here. She's here. Those who have come here and think of the Master will certainly see their chosen ideal one day. If they're not able to do so during their lifetime, they will at least have his vision at the moment before their death. And now a couple of quotes from other direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna that were particularly close to Holy Mother, Swami Premananda and Swami Yogananda. First Premananda, Swami Premananda. Who has understood Holy Mother? She does not reveal the highest trace of the power in her. The Master showed the power of knowledge, but what do you see in her? Even that power is effaced. But with all that, what great power she possesses. Hail, Mother, Hail, Mother. He's saying, Jai Ma, Jai Ma. Hail, Mother, Hail, Mother. Victory unto you, the fountain of all power. The poison we dare not swallow, we push to her. By that he meant certain disciples that they didn't want to initiate. They would say, go to the Mother. Go to the Mother. This is what he means by that. I know that by having read the context in which this is said. The poison we dare not swallow, we push to her. and Mother welcomes it. What infinite power! What immeasurable compassion! Hail, Mother! How insignificant we are! We did not even see the Master behaving that way. How much he tested people before he accepted them! And what do you find here? Strange, surprisingly strange. She gives shelter to one and all. She eats food offered by everyone and digests it all. Mother, Mother, Hail Mother. Remember her infinite compassion in pleasure and pain. Remember her infinite compassion in pleasure and pain, in prosperity and adversity, in scarcity and epidemic, in war and turmoil. Hail, Mother! Hail, Mother! Swami Yogananda, who was actually initiated by Mother, he was the Master's disciple, but the Master never gave him an initiation. After he left the body, he told Holy Mother to give him initiation and told her what mantra to give him. So he spent a lot of time with her and was a very great support to her in the early years after the Master died. Very soon after the Master died, the Mother went and spent approximately a year in Vrindavan. And this is Yogananda about Holy Mother at Vrindavan. We were all surprised to see the spirit of Sri Ramakrishna unified with her. We realized that the Master and the Mother were in essence one. The Master told me many times that there was no difference between his body and that of the Mother. The Master told me many times that there was no difference between his body and that of the Mother. I have heard from Yogin Ma and Golap Ma, two of her close female companions, both of whom were very important in serving the Mother and serving others after the Mother passed away. I have heard from Yogin Ma and Golap Ma that the Mother at times openly spoke of herself as Radha. At Vrindavan, through the Master's grace, I could understand and appreciate the divine Leela of Krishna. So this is Yogananda's testimony about this. There's more. You're welcome to read it in the full transcriptions. Now back to the Mother. Keep a picture of the Master before you and know for certain that he is always with you. Shed tears and sincerely pray, O Lord, draw me toward you, give me peace of mind. Have devotion to the Master, and whenever you are in distress, speak it out to him. Now I remind you, this is a month in which we're studying Bhakti Yoga. This is the devotional approach. So the quotes that were selected with that in mind. Mother had other moods. You'll find them reflected in all of those quotes. But for the bhakta, for those who are devotionally inclined, these are her direct instructions. Keep a picture of the Master before you and know for certain that he is always with you. The picture and the Master are not two different things. This we're told again and again by Mother and by the Swamis. The picture is the Master. It's not a picture of the Master. That picture is the Master. And Mother said, I haven't recorded the quote here, but she said in another context, that we are extremely fortunate among human beings in history because we have this actual photograph of the Master that is the Master himself. Keep a picture of the Master before you and know for certain that he is always with you. Shed tears and sincerely pray, O Lord, draw me toward you, give me peace of mind. Have devotion to the Master, and whenever you are in distress, speak it out to him. And for those of you who wonder, what kind of relationship do I have to the divine? How do I offer my food to the divine? How do I offer anything to the divine? Here's from the mother's instruction. There is no need of rituals in offering food or anything else. There is no need of rituals in offering food to the master. The mantra one gets from one's guru is enough for everything. Notice the simplicity. Notice the directness. The relationship is not even, there's no intercession even of ritual in the relationship between us and them. The mantra you receive from your guru, your diksha mantra, is sufficient for everything. You may think of me as Radha, or in any other way that appeals to your mind. It will be enough if you think of me even as your mother. Again, the simplicity, the directness. No formality, no times are set, no rites are needful for chanting of thy name, so vast is thy mercy. The same here. It will be enough if you think of me even as your mother. I shan't be able to turn away anybody if he addresses me as mother. If anyone begs me by calling me mother, I shan't be able to contain myself. Now just imagine that promise. If anyone begs me by calling me mother, I shan't be able to contain myself. I know whether you are making spiritual progress or not. How can you understand it? You will achieve everything. That wasn't my repetition. That's hers. I know whether you are making spiritual progress or not. How can you understand it? You will achieve everything. Most obstacles in worship are not external. They are internal. They will gradually fall off one after another by taking the Master's name and by meditation. Do your duty. Don't pay attention to whether the blemishes of the mind are persisting or not. And this is such a potent instruction. We worry because, I'm still doing such and such. We worry because things continue to arise in our minds. This is just a waste of our time. It doesn't deserve your attention. Return your attention to the divine presence. Return your attention to what does deserve your attention. And don't worry about these blemishes, as Mother calls them. She says, if you persist in your spiritual practice, they will fall off naturally, one by one. So often we agitate our minds unnecessarily. This is one way we do it. So I'm going to repeat what she said. Most obstacles in worship are not external, they are internal. They will gradually fall off one after another by taking the Master's name and by meditation. Do your duty. Don't pay attention to whether the blemishes of the mind are persisting or not. Now, this is the Mother of the Universe speaking, telling us how to control our minds. Don't do your duty. Don't pay attention to whether the blemishes of the mind are persisting or not. And then, just in case you have some attraction to Mother Mary or to Sita, rather than to some present, because you have some attachment to Rama and the Ramayana and so on, or to the Christian Gospels. A disciple asked Mother, "Mother, did you come with all the incarnations?" Mother's answer was very simple. "Yes, my son." "Mother, did you come with all the incarnations?" "Yes, my son." As I said, there are 30 pages. Single-spaced. 30 pages. They're all selected from the various books that were written by about the Holy Mother and the reminiscences that were recorded by her disciples. Such assurances. She tells us, I mean, I repeated just a couple in which it appears, but she says over and over, if you turn yourself in this direction, you have nothing to fear. She says, "Providence, destiny, dare not throw my children into hell, into great suffering. They dare not." So again, this is the devotional approach. This is the approach of the heart. And if you read the complete works of Swami Vivekananda, his final and most considered conclusion was that love is the power that conquers all. He who first loves without thinking knows God. And now, as those of you who come regularly know, comes the best part of this hour. We are a congregation, we are a sangha, we are a collection of sincere spiritual seekers who have a great deal to offer one another. So please, what did this give rise to you and you? Let us talk with one another. Ask questions, make comments, observations. What did this give rise to you and you? Someone be bold. Go first. Yes. In the back.
Yes. I was reading one of these books by the devotees on the first phase of monks under Ramakrishna.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramakrishna often said that the eight fetters to God, divinity or salvation, whatever we call it, one of the eight fetters amongst fear and shame was good conduct.
Mm-hmm.
At first I was amazed as to why is good conduct a fetter?
If it's a fetter if we're doing it because we think we should.
Yes, that's what I was reasoning.
Yes, well, it's not a question of reasoning. This is how it arises in meditation. It's if you're doing it because you think you should. Now, of course, we must obey the law. Otherwise, we get in trouble with the law. But good conduct because you think you should is hypocrisy.
Right.
As Sri Krishna points out in chapter 5. So, as Mother says, pursue your spiritual practices, and these fetters, including concerns about conduct and blemishes, simply fall away of themselves. Swami Shivananda, Mahapurush Maharaj, the second president of the Ramakrishna Order and a direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, says, the great open secret is you have only to install God in your heart. And then you don't have to worry about the yamas and niyamas. You don't have to worry about the restraints and the observances. Install God in your heart and everything will happen of itself. Now, can we be self-deceived? We often are self-deceived. So, we have to be careful. But nevertheless, that is the lesson. Good conduct. We learn by doing. If we are afraid to make mistakes, because good conduct says, I shouldn't do that, then we simply remain trapped behind that idea, that limitation. What did the gopis do when Krishna played his flute? They ran from their homes. They abandoned their children and their husbands and ran to be with Krishna. That was not good conduct. That was reprehensible. They were scolded, no doubt. But as the story of Martha and Mary in the Christian Gospel says, when the bridegroom is present, be in the bridesmaid's chamber. Be with the bridegroom. So there's always these concerns. We can think ourselves into inaction, paralysis by analysis.
The thing of it is that I found myself, I'm not saying when good conduct is done for the sake of society or a good image, or to make sure that everybody, you're in line with the mores of the society. If that is the perspective of doing good conduct, it's not good. Mm-hmm. But when you yourself know that I should do the right thing, for example, I have found that in doing the right thing, I've fallen in more trouble. In doing good conduct, I've fallen in more trouble than if I had used my own brains and done what was my model conduct. For example, if somebody is my oppressor, I've been taught, be nice to everybody. Doesn't matter if they're your oppressor, they're trying to do you harm. Obviously, you're able to see that. But my thing was, no, a good girl, a good Indian girl, mm-hmm. a good Indian wife, whatever those little roles we play in society, shouldn't be reacting, shouldn't put the oppressor in his place. Should not, all those things that we good people mm-hmm. hold themselves back because we've been told to be ideally good people. I found myself being in more trouble because of my good conduct than if I would have used my brain and said, no, out the door I go if you treat me like trash or whatever other circumstances. This is just an example.
Yes, well, the master, if you remember, one of the most master's most important parables ends with the punchline, fool, I didn't tell you not to hiss. I told you not to bite. I didn't tell you not to hiss.
You forget the hissing because you've been brainwashed.
Oh, yes. Well, that's the hypocrisy. That's the hypocrisy of good conduct. I'll get to you, Dr. Mitchell. The second, there's a wonderful old folk wisdom that's repeated here in America. I haven't heard it much lately, but I used to hear it a lot in my youth. No good deed goes unpunished.
I live by that. I have noticed it, yes. First-hand experience. Exactly what I was trying to say.
Right, exactly. Dr. Munch.
See, the terms good conduct and bad conduct is a poor choice of words. Right conduct versus the wrong conduct. So what you call good conduct cannot be right or may not be right. But the good conduct remains a good conduct. And especially it is time for us to recognize that biologically and spiritually, a woman is far more superior than man. For example, gopis ran towards Krishna, but their husbands, Gopa, they never did. Because they were arrested in the concept of good conduct and bad conduct. Similarly, the mother, even after nourishing the baby for 9 months, she has no problem in separating from the baby when the umbilical cord is... I have never seen a mother saying, don't cut this umbilical cord. keep it. That's my attachment to my baby. She says, let it go. Or like the famous story of King Solomon, when the two women came claiming the same baby, the real one says, don't cut the baby into half. I would rather let the poor baby go. This kind of endurance, self-sacrifice, giving away, suffering, and see the right conduct is instinctive in a woman, and unfortunately it lags behind in the masculine sex many times.
Yes, that's why we've established this horrible patriarchy. Swami Vivekananda said, it will be the women who lead us forward from here. He did say that, you know.
He said, give me 10 women who will outdo 50 men's work.
Yes.
Somewhere he said that.
Yes. Yes.
That they would not only be more efficient, but more conscientious.
Yes. And then we have to remember that what it says in the Chandi, that mother is in every being.
And to me, the biggest sacrifice that Holy Mother did or gave was when she and Ramakrishna had a dialogue. When Sri Ramakrishna asked her, it's your choice. Would you rather have me live with you as husband and wife? Or would you rather have me dedicated my life to God or to self-realization? And that time, even when mother, like any ordinary woman, would like to help children, she let it go. And immediately, and Ramakrishna said, don't ever feel deprived because you may not be biological mother, not in these words, but you will be mother to all.
Yes.
All our children.
Just for the purposes of the rest of the congregation here, you've married two incidents.
Yeah.
The first incident was when she first came to him.
Yeah.
And he said, why have you come? Have you come to drag me down to a worldly life? And she said, no, I've come to help you on your spiritual path to become who you are. It was another incident where she was, as a Brahmin woman, the injunction is to have children. And she said, well, what's to become of me? I will have no children. And he said, oh, dear Sharada, you don't need to worry about this. You will have thousands of children. And as I said, her disciples were numberless. Her disciples were countless. It's, you know, the number that's spoken of is somewhere north of 2,000 disciples. So, yes, but you're right. Both those things happened. They just didn't happen at the same time.
Yeah.
But you have to remember what she also said, that just looking at the Master filled her heart with a picture of bliss. This is her testimony. I'll read a poem to that effect at some time, maybe by the end of the month. She said, peeping through the screen when he would come out on the veranda from his room, just peeping through the screen there at the Nahabat, and to see him with his disciples, she said, filled her heart with a picture of bliss. So, obviously, there was nothing taken away, only that given, that great presence, that great power. Anyone else? Yes, please.
Well, there's a little book in our bookshop called The Short Life of Holy Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Small thin one.
Mm-hmm.
On the
yeah, rack. It's on the spinner rack there.
There's so many incidents about Holy Mother.
So yes.
Described there in vivid details, showing her holiness as well as the village woman she was.
Yes.
One of them struck me is a low caste, so-called low caste, Chandala woman, I think, came to visit the Master, and she would nowhere to go in the night.
Mm-hmm.
So she accommodated her in a little room.
In the little room in the Nahabat, yes.
And she fed her, she took care of her illness,
mm-hmm.
and even washed her dirty clothes so that she should never change. And she accommodated her in the night.
Yes.
And, you know, so many incidents are described in the little book.
For those of you who don't know, for a great deal of the time that Holy Mother lived at Dakshineshwar with Sri Ramakrishna, she lived in one of the music towers called a Nahabat. And there was a little storage room that was made her room, low-ceilinged. You had to bend down to get into it. Even she, who was not a tall woman, had to bend down to get into it. And it was low-ceilinged, small, I forget the dimensions, 8 by 12.
Like 6 feet by 6 feet?
No, not quite that. Not quite that tall. Not quite that small. I think it was 8 by 12, something like that. Something, 8 by 10. But in any case, you know, there was stuff stored in there. Along with, and stuff hanging from the ceiling. This is where she lived, and she slept on that cold stone floor. It left her with rheumatism for the rest of her life. So, but still, she said, being there with the Master filled her heart with a picture of bliss. She never regretted or complained about the privations, the austerities of those years. She cooked. She sewed, she did all of the things that were necessary for the Master and the visitors and then later disciples from that tiny room. Just, when you read of it, it is hardly credible that such a human being, such a person lived as a human being, such a goddess lived as a human being. But nevertheless, there it is. And then later on, she lived part of the time in Kolkata in a room above the office where the Udbodhan publication was published and where Swami Sharadananda lived. And it was fairly nice quarters. Swami Sharadananda built her nice quarters. But in the city, she said she felt trapped. And so she would often go travel back to her home village of Jairambati. And many of the really wonderful incidents that are related in these books took place in Jayarambati. Anything else? Thank you, Sadas. For those of you who don't have the patience to read big books, and not everybody does, that's fine. That short life of Holy Mother is really quite a wonderful read. Anything else from anyone? Well, these are, and by the way, as always is said, no one is expected to believe any of this. Not expected to swallow it whole cloth. No blind faith here. Just try these things on for size. Just see what it's like to gaze on a picture of the Master. Just do some of the things that Holy Mother said and see how it goes for you. But those of us who do believe, find all of what was said this morning and all of the rest that we know about Holy Mother and the Master and the rest of what the Master called his band of minstrels, those who came with him to accomplish his mission. So uplifting and inspiring, especially Holy Mother. Vivekananda said that the Mother is more inspiring than the Master. Because she just lived her life entirely for others. As Yogananda pointed out, or Premananda. Premananda pointed out, the Master didn't take that many disciples. There were just a few. He was left to Mother to have thousands. and serve day in and day out. Day in and day out. Without complaint. Though she did. One time her family, not her disciples, but the family that she lived with there in Jayarambati, they vexed her so, she said, "Don't push me too far. That which lives in here, if it hisses but once, not Shiva, not Vishnu, not Brahma can protect you." And the Master said the same thing. "Don't get her mad at you. Even I can't protect you."
That was the hiss. That was the hiss.
So, I'm sorry.
That was the hiss.
Yes. That was the hiss, right? Right. That was the hiss. Yeah, no bite. Just the hiss. So, just to return to what you said, Krishna Kali, no, we must not allow ourselves to be doormats. The highest ideal, of course, is that preached by Christ. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, present your left cheek. If someone asks you for your coat, give them the coat and your cloak as well. That is the perfect selflessness. That is the complete recognition that one is not the body or anything having to do with the body. But until that state of sainthood, of perfection, is attained, we must not allow ourselves to be a doormat, because it just keeps the mind agitated. Spiritual progress is blocked. That's not the way to play the game of life.
Yes, what you are saying has been said by Vivekananda, that if you let anybody control your mind, very quickly it will descend to madness, because you will no longer be able to take any decision.
Yeah.
Your willpower will be gone and you will act like fanatics.
Yes.
Or as descend to madness.
Yes, exactly.
And I see that and I understand what he says.
What is madness? It's a total disturbance of the mind. Total disturbance of the mind. So exactly. When our mind is too disturbed, we cannot see anything clearly. We cannot take any decision well. So, as those of you who know or who come regularly know, there will be some snacks on the table. There will be coffee and tea available. So please come in the monastery and let us continue our fellowship there. This is a wonderful and very warm and loving congregation. Let's continue to share that inside. We'll close with, again, well, I'm going to read, because some of you weren't here when I read Swami Yogeshananda's condition, I'm going to read again what was sent to us by somebody who used to live here and now lives in California. His name is Zach Wiles. His mother still lives here, Deborah Wiles. So this is an update on Swami Yogeshananda, who is now in hospice care at the Tribhuvan Monastery. This message was sent yesterday afternoon by Zach Wiles. Hi, everyone. It's about 4 p.m. here, and I am sitting with Swami. He is still with us, but he is peaceful and ready to go. Yet, he still has a small appetite for juice and cookies. The morphine is affecting his mind. Just parenthetically, not just the morphine, but the Swami's kidneys have failed. And so, and he's refusing dialysis. So it's also the toxin buildup that goes along with kidney failure. It's not just the morphine. The morphine and the toxins are affecting his mind, but he still has his trademark charm. He speaks in short phrases and goes in and out of sleep, but I can tell he appreciates small gestures like holding his hand and adjusting his covers. The monks and attendants are very attentive. Besides the caregiver, there is an informal vigil of brothers trading watches sitting by his bed. And he is still making jokes. He must be adjusted in bed every 2 hours to avoid bed sores. "You are all amateurs," he smirked, as two swamis and I were ham-fistedly trying to roll him on his side. "Hey, we're doing this for free, you know," I retorted. Swami Sarvadevananda is here this weekend. For those of you who don't know, Swami Sarvadevananda is the head minister here. I'm the resident minister. Swami Sarvadevananda is also the head minister at the Vedanta Society of Southern California, and therefore the Tribhuvan Monastery. Swami Sarvadevananda is here this weekend and spent some time with the Swami. A small trickle of visitors comes in to say hello and drop off sweets. I think later I will move the Swami's small shrine from his room into this room. It's very simple, with a picture of his guru, Swami Atishwarananda. The atmosphere is very calm, serene, and timeless, save for the constant whirring of the oxygen machine in the corner. The Swami has absolutely no fear or regret and is patiently waiting and slightly complaining in a joking way to be recalled back to God. More later, Jai Ma, Zach. So again, just if each of us can just hold a prayerful thought for the Swami, that his transition be, of course it's in the charge of the Master and Mother, so what could go wrong? But it doesn't hurt for us to think lovingly of him. So now our closing chant. Again, the translation is by Swami Yogeshananda. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Peace, Peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Om Hari Om Tat Sat. I'll see you inside.